This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Cincinnati leaders have announced a proposal to review and refresh the city's collaborative agreement, negotiated in 2002. The agreement was put in place following the civil unrest in 2001 after a white Cincinnati police officer, Stephen Roach, shot and killed Timothy Thomas, a 19-year-old unarmed African-American. Even though federal monitoring of the agreement ended in 2008, it's been used as a guide to continue improving relations between Cincinnati police and the community. Joining us to discuss the importance of the original collaborative agreement and what will take place during this current review and refresh are Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley, local activist Iris Rowley, civil rights attorney Al Gerhard Stein, and Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac. We are in the Corbett studio at WVXU today, so we won't be able to take your calls, but you can still join the conversation by emailing talk@wvxu.org or by finding us on Facebook or Twitter. Mayor Cranley, Chief Isaac, Iris, Al, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Iris and Al, you both played a big role in the creation of the collaborative agreement, and I'd like to talk about some of the historical perspective to start off with. What led up to the creation of this agreement?
You had the history.
For years, we had been suing the Cincinnati Police Department, and we also had been responding as a city with blue ribbon panels. There were all these groups of business people and so on that would get formed after a bad event. They'd hold hearings. The public could eventually get bored. There'd be recommendations. They'd be put in a binder, and the binder would go on a shelf. I used to carry around three giant three-ring binders full of recommendations. We knew by the end of 1999 and the end of 2000 that that wasn't going to work anymore. We needed a court order to really implement reforms that would change policing. And that's what started the effort toward the collaborative, a class action lawsuit challenging discrimination, challenging excessive force, and inviting the entire city to be a part of the solution.
Iris?
Well, and so as Al has explained, the historical preface of all this, when the Black United Front, when we actually formed, we formed because 13 downtown restaurants decided to close during Jazz Festival in the summer of 2000. And then we had what we called 2 and 24, Jeffrey Irons and Roger Owensby. And the community was angry. And so the community asked us to focus on what was actually going on and what could be done. And so we started meeting with the community, having community meetings, getting, you know, where had we been, what had happened, and what did they want to see happen. And these two white guys, Al Gerhard Stein and Scott Greenwood, would come to our meetings and say, let us help you. We have some remedies. We have all this historical data. Let's pull our collective efforts and gifts together, and maybe we can finally get something done. And with the blessings of the community, that's what we decided to do.
But then I guess, unfortunately, the tragic incident involving Timothy Thomas, where he was shot to death, that was the final catalyst in all this.
We had filed the lawsuit. We had invited a collaborative process with stakeholders participating in negotiations around the remedy. That was pending in front of City Council. John was on City Council at the time. It was also pending in front of the FOP. I think we're still the first police reform effort that openly invited the FOP to participate. And while that was all on the table and before everybody had committed to join, Timothy Thomas was shot and we had our days of unrest. So that was certainly a catalyst toward getting everyone's attention on this and getting us out of that mode and into a mode of constructive problem solving.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Cranley?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate history of what happened. And and I do believe hindsight's 20/20 that it was necessary for the court to be involved. And so I think that the fact that the lawsuit was filed by a Black United Front under the leadership of Iris and Damon and Damon Lynch the third, Al Gerstein's leadership, et cetera, has made a hugely positive impact on the history of this city. As Al pointed out, there was a decision once the lawsuit was filed. The question was, do we litigate or mediate the lawsuit? And as Al pointed out, there was a vote of City Council, I think in May or June of 2001, after Timothy Thomas. And it was literally a 5-4 vote And it was Mayor Lucan, Alicia Reese, Paul Booth, Manette Cooper, and me. The five of us voted to mediate the lawsuit. Four members of council voted not to. It was extremely controversial vote at the time, but I think history has proven it to be the right way to move forward. And, you know, I was thinking recently, in fact, I penned an op-ed for the Enquirer this weekend about sort of the idea of a beloved community that Martin Luther King talked about. And this came out of tragedy. It came out of crisis. There's no question that, you know, because of the events of Timothy Thomas and others, that we got to a crisis point. And I called for the update of the collaborative and to bring back Saul Green to see how we're doing 16 years later, 15 years from the agreement, because I want to stay ahead of these issues and want to prevent the next crisis. The original collaborative came out of crisis in response to crisis, acute crisis. We, and I believe the police department, has truly embraced the community-oriented policing that is embedded in the collaborative agreement. And bringing in a guy, Saul Green, who has the credibility to look at these issues and make recommendations on how to stay contemporary to all of these issues like body cameras, et cetera, is a way that we can continue to keep our city progressive. And I'll just – final point. The fact that Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, is pulling out of these deals across the country, I think is terrible for those cities. I think the Justice Department played a major role with us. It wasn't easy. It was difficult. There was lots of tension. But in the long run, the federal government and the court system has a role to play. And I feel bad for cities who aren't going to have the help from the Justice Department. I'm glad we got it. And we are, I think, as Saul Green said last year, he doesn't know of – or last week when he was here, he doesn't know of any city in America that has voluntarily asked for a refresh of a Justice Department court agreement like this one. And so I'm very proud of our city and the support that we have to be open-minded, transparent, and to say, hey, how can we do better?
Once the refresh is done, Mayor, will it have to be approved by a court?
Well, not by itself, but I think there will be a huge bias towards the recommendations that come from Saul Green. Remember, Saul Green
was the original monitor.
Was the monitor who spent years being highly critical of the pace of change within the city. And by the time he left, he said no city police department had made so much changes so fast as Cincinnati. And he left believing that we were a role model, which was echoed by Loretta Lynch 2 years ago. And Chief Isaac, who's sitting right next to me, from the moment I brought up the idea of the update, has been nothing but a champion of saying we've got nothing to hide and we can always improve, and let's keep the process going.
Chief Isaac, what position did you hold in 2001, 2002 when all this was going
many
on?
Many of these incidents that Al and Iris talked about, I recalled. I responded to the scene of a number of these. I was actually a sergeant working in our internal investigations unit at the time. And, you know, one caveat about this is that there were many in the department that really recognized the need for reform back then. And when this agreement came about, you know, many were excited to see this type of change take place.
What kind of changes? What did the collaborative agreement actually bring to policing in Cincinnati?
On the front end, I think the big thing was, first and foremost, always the need to have community engagement and community collaboration. But at the very front of it, it was really examining what was happening with uses of force and the things that Iris mentioned, the 2 and 24. I remember very well, I went to the scene both nights of those incidents. And, you know, there was a lot of concern about particularly the Roger Ornsby incident. And many inside the department, many officers had a great deal of concern as what was taking place during that time period.
Iris, how effective do you think that the original collaborative agreement has been at changing the face of policing in Cincinnati?
I think it's been real effective, but something the mayor said that I want to underscore. this has not been easy at all, because we're talking about changing cultures, and we're talking about changing how we deal with one another. We're talking about human behavior. And so this thing has not been pretty for those of us who've stayed at the table. And so for, you know, people like Al Gerhardstein, who has not left this process to make sure that this process is exacerbated in what we what the possibilities are, and not where we were, but what the possibilities are, so that we can continue to get better. Because as long as we have the Black community, of whom I represent, and police, we need to have continuous conversations and continuous looks into what public safety looks like for these communities. I think it's been a real challenge to get other systems to buy in on what we're doing. Media, all these things that intersect it, that help and develop people's lives. Poverty, drugs, housing, all of these things that play into what public safety looks like. So I think it's worked. And it's in the beginning, the foundation. But we need to revisit, refresh, whatever you want to call it, to make sure that what we're saying and what we're actually doing are meeting one another, and the people can see and feel that.
Yeah, what's your perspective on this?
Yeah, let me just chip in on what difference this all made. We set some very high goals, and we aren't there by any means, although we still share the goal. So that's the good news. So, for example, one of our primary goals was to institute bias-free policing. We also wanted to keep the public safe while reducing arrests, because we know that arrests, if that's the only tool in your tool bag, you're going to feed mass incarceration. You're going to be arresting a disproportionate number of Black people. And over the years during the collaborative, we've cut arrests in this city by half, and crime is lower. So we're doing okay there. But among those groups that we are arresting, it's still 67% Black. Mm-hmm. So one of the goals of the refresh is, why is that? What can we do to really dissect that and answer the question of how to make arrests and any strategy we use most fair? And the other thing we instituted, and I don't think any other city has openly embraced this, is problem solving. Every crime has a location, a victim, and a perpetrator. 10% of the locations, perpetrators, and victims create 80% of the crime. So if you can focus on those three sides of the triangle and those repeat victims, locations, and perpetrators, you're not going to be sweeping people up. You're not going to be doing vortex. You know, vortex and other types of strategies that treat citizens like suspects. And you are going to be using your data wisely. And we're still in the throes of trying to make sure we're doing that effectively.
Chief, how much is the Cincinnati Police Department relying on data, like what Al is talking about, to help you in your policing efforts?
You know, I can tell you, we're a totally different agency. I think every effort that we employ, we always examine the data first. I think he really hit the nail on the head on much of this, is that I think we've done a very good job focusing on that crime triangle. We've done a good job focusing on offenders. We've recently launched our pivot program to really focus on some of those places. But I think there is a tremendous amount of opportunity for growth in that victim side. And I think Iris touched quite a bit on that as we look at some of these factors that also impact that, as we talk about housing, we talk about employment, as we talk about education. There's so many other things that I believe impact that other side of the triangle, that this is where it really takes that collaboration and bringing in other people to really play a role in it.
And Chief, how much will body cams and the constant presence of digital cameras, how much is that going to play a part in this new review of the collaborative agreement?
That's certainly one of the things that's going to be reviewed. And really examining the role that it plays. It's an opportunity to be more transparent. It's an opportunity to really examine what takes place in a situation. So far, and as we've gone throughout this process, oftentimes in a citizen complaint type situation, it turns out to be an accusation denial. To have the opportunity to really capture that whole encounter, I think it's really going to do a lot to work through some of that.
We will continue our conversation about the collaborative agreement. You can join us by emailing talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss Cincinnati's collaborative agreement and the proposal to review and refresh it, Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley, local activist Iris Rowley, civil rights attorney Al Gerhardstein, and Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac. You can join us by emailing talk@wvxu.org or by finding us on Facebook or Twitter. Mayor, the term refresh, I'm kind of curious about why that particular word in regards to the collaborative agreement, why use refresh in this case?
Well, what happened and is happening across the country and locally are concerning to all Americans. You've got a number of high-profile shootings that look to me as unjustified. You've got the Tenzing trial occurring now. And then you had last year and the year before, you had here we had Sonny Kim killed, and then we had Dallas and Baton Rouge where officers were being targeted and killed. So tensions were rising on all sides around the country, and we're not immune from that. And we had – obviously the Tenzing case does not involve a Cincinnati police officer, but it clearly affects our community. And in the midst of all of that, I – thought to myself, as I was hearing from civil rights leaders who felt that tensions were rising and from police officers who were worried about their safety, that this could be a bad mix. And while we believe and are trying to live up to the spirit of the collaborative, there have been changes over the last 15 years, body cameras being the most dramatic, advancement in thought of implicit bias and things of that nature, all of which we do. But fundamentally, I wanted to be a leader that would get ahead of these issues and not have to deal with them like we did last time at, you know, as a result of a crisis. And so last fall, I think it was at New Prospect Baptist Church, the Enquirer had a big forum. I called two things. One, that we would have an update of the collaborative, and two, that we specifically try to bring back Saul Green, who I believe, you know, who was here last week and did and said a lot, you know, very eloquently about his experience here, who had and has the integrity to call it like he sees it. And there were also questions about how well and how much we are consistent with what the original collaborative is. We have nothing to hide, and let's see what report he comes back with and what changes we can make to make even more progress.
If you'd like to join our conversation again, you can email us talk@wvxu.org. Alicia sent us an email. She says she's concerned over officers now being convicted in the court of public opinion before all the facts come out. And as an example, she points to the Joe Dieter's statements, Prosecutor Dieter's statements in the Ray Tenzing trial. So I'm wondering if anybody has any thoughts on that.
Well, you know, that's a criminal prosecution of an officer. And in that sense, Joe Dieter's treated the officer like he does every other major suspect. He announces an indictment. He gives his interpretation of the evidence, and he called it as he saw it. I think the officer was treated just like all the other suspects in major crimes in the city. That is not a direct part of the collaborative, but we do want to see in any community that the criminal system holds officers accountable after a trial. I mean, she's right. We shouldn't just be convicting people based on rumor. But now the trial's going on, and we'll see what happens. So I think in the end, people need to be treated the same, whether they're an officer under indictment or a citizen.
Well, and to Alicia's point, the black community has always felt under indictment by the prosecutor's office, particularly under Joe Dieter's and the statements that he's made about black people. And when it reverberates throughout the media every day, we see the same negative stereotyping every day, which flows into the minds of people, including our public servants, including police officers. So we're on a daily basis trying to combat all of these negative forces, Alicia, that determine all black people. So if one black person does something, then Iris is automatically guilty. And that's what we see in the media. And I'm hoping that one of the things that Cincinnati is able to do, since Cincinnati likes to say it's a model, is that we really become a model. And that includes the media and not helping to do divisive stories, are categorizing people in very negative ways in a continuous way. We see humanistic stories when it's a non-African-American that commits a crime. But when it is an African-American, the characteristics are very negative, such as evil, assassins. And we don't hear those every day, but we've heard those about African-Americans as well, Alicia. So we're very concerned as a whole that we all are being placed under one umbrella.
And I should point out, too, that the UC Police Department, which Ray Tensing was a part of, they were not under the collaborative agreement. This is only Cincinnati
correct.
Police.
That's correct.
Yeah, but they did have an MOU with the city to do traffic stops on the streets. So we do bear, the city does bear some burden of that.
But the MOU did not incorporate the terms of the collaborative, so that's part of the problem. And to go back to one of the things the mayor was talking about, the idea of a refresh. We did have a forum at New Prospect that was actually organized by the Black United Front as sort of a 15-year celebration of the collaborative, and we appreciate the mayor coming and other leaders. But and it was an open discussion. It was very helpful, and body cams were a big part of it. But one of the things that came out that I think we can address in this review is that the CCA, when it was originally designed, the Citizens Complaint Authority, it was all complaint-driven, and it was sort of looking at individual complaints and then repeat complainers and repeat officers, but not as clearly focused on repeat problems. And it's in their mandate, but it's kind of buried. That's the kind of thing that the whole country's grown up changing that a little bit. And now in many of the 14 consent decrees that the Justice Department's entered into, their Citizens Complaint Review Authority calls for a review of ongoing problems, whether they are violating police procedure or not. And I'm hoping we can move the CCA in that direction. So again, we can continually get ahead of problems. You know, so maybe rules ought to be changed, like we did with tasers, which came out of a CCA investigation. Mm-hmm. So there's good work that we need to do.
Mayor?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is exactly the point of an update and refresh is, you know, in light of changing circumstances, you know, what should we be doing more of, doing less of? You know, for example, you know, the amount of staffing that was needed for the CCA when we started, when there were lots of complaints, was one level. It went down. You know, there's been concerns that recently those complaints are ticking up again. The whole point of bringing Saul Green in is to make recommendations to us as what should the CCA be doing? How many people should we have? Is it enough for the workload? Is it not enough for the workload? Is it too much? You know, the point is that we're not afraid. We're transparent. We're open. And we want to hear from an independent evaluator who has integrity and credibility where we're doing well, where we're doing better than anticipated, and maybe where we're coming up short and can do a continuous improvement.
And Mayor, one of the elements of the collaborative agreement that fell by the wayside was the tracking of traffic stops. Right. Is that likely to come back as part of this refresh?
It already has, okay. If I can weigh in. And you know, just to expound on that, there are a myriad of reasons why to do the refresh, but quite simply, it's just the right thing to do. It really is. We made a lot of accomplishments, but so much has changed in the past decade as well. The use of technology, our ability to use data. I remember how much of a struggle it was on the front end, and now there's just so many opportunities to do so many different things. And not to mention just the partnerships that we have in the academic community that can give a lot of guidance to this. That was sort of new when we started this. Now, for many departments, it's commonplace. So I think there's so much opportunity not only to surpass where we are, but just to continue to grow in the future. It's just simply the right thing to do.
And I agree with the chief. This is a huge opportunity. And I thank Al for bringing up this six-day conference. I'm upset with the mayor that he didn't because it took a huge amount of organizing to get that done. And the tagline was adjusting the collaborative agreement. And so it's not just something that came from the mayor's office. The community has been asking for a refresh, an update. Where do we go next? All the while, we've been doing a lot of great work under the collaborative, and it's not stopped. And so what I'm hoping that comes comes out of this is that we really do become the model that we're talking about. And despite who our next mayor or our next chief is, that these things are so internally institutionalized that they don't go away, and that we don't have the opportunity to have such a blunder like the early warning tracking system. That is the foundation of the collaborative agreement. We can't begin to build trust if those foundational things are disrupted at any form of the collaborative agreement.
Mayor, did you want to respond to what Iris said?
Just that the whole point of the collaborative is to bring people together who don't always agree. And I believe in dialogue. I believe in understanding and working with people. If we all agreed and saw the world the same way, we wouldn't have needed the collaborative in the first place. So that's the wonderful thing about what Cincinnati's embraced as a culture, and I've tried to emulate as a leader, is to bring in people who don't always agree with me and put their concerns on the table so we can work through them and try to come to a better place.
How long is it going to take to go through this whole process of refreshing the agreement?
I think these guys are in a better position to answer that than I am.
Under the work plan that the contract calls for, we're supposed to be done by December with the whole evaluation, and then there'll be a series of recommendations that come out of Saul Green's shop, and there'll be an implementation schedule at that time.
Correct.
Well, Chief Isaac and Mayor Cranley, thank you so much for joining
us
this afternoon.
Us.
Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley and Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac. We will take a short break, and Iris Rowley and Al Gerhard Stein will rejoin us in the next part of the conversation. You can join us by emailing talk@wvxu.org or by finding us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We continue the discussion about Cincinnati's collaborative agreement and the proposal for a refresh with local activist Iris Rowley, civil rights attorney Al Gerhard Stein, Enquirer City Hall reporter Sharon Coolidge, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman. You can email your questions and comments to talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jay and Sherry, thank you for joining in on this. We appreciate it.
Good afternoon.
Glad to be here.
So how much public input is there going to be into refreshing this agreement? I mean, how can people get involved in this?
Well, people can get involved by going to several places to fill out the community's perception survey on Cincinnati Police Department. And one place is the CincinnatiCollaborativeAgreement.com website, of which the community is running. And that will, the survey's there, but that will be a hub for the up-and-coming community conversations. I'm not quite sure of the other website, Al. The
Citizens Complaint Authority will have it on their website, and we hope to have this community survey on everybody's
and
website.
Everybody, yeah.
In
absolutely.
Fact, you're going to get a
everybody's going to get
at the
it.
End of this show, and it'll be on the WVXU website. So,
yes, it is.
And that is simply one aspect of engaging the community. It's a detailed survey that includes the original three questions we asked everyone during our original dialogues. What is your vision for public safety and police-community relations? Why do you care about it? And how would you go about implementing it? So we will actually go back and ask some of those same questions we asked at the beginning. We'll also be doing a survey of all the police officers. Mm-hmm. We'll also be doing a survey of the people who have filed complaints with the Citizens Complaint Authority. And we'll be using, and then we'll also be interviewing, this is something we didn't do back then, interviewing public defenders, prosecutors, judges, probation officers, and others who have formal roles in the community, in the criminal justice system, to ask their views on police community relations, so that we can use all of these ideas to help refresh the collaborative.
And we want everyone to go and fill out the survey. Survey everyone, and including and especially the Black community, because we need to know exactly how people are feeling and what they're thinking and their recommendations. We did a survey in 2009, and we collected over 1,500 surveys on the impacted class of the collaborative agreement. And it was unscientific, but it was something that the community could let us know where they were in this process, how much they were aware of the collaborative, all of the things that had come out of it. Did they feel like its usefulness was working for them? So we do have some data. And as I said, Mark, we've been doing some good work around this particular area. It doesn't get much traction in the media because it's good stuff. And it's hard work. It's not easy. This is not easy sitting down at the table and talking every every day about community police relations where people have to go to work, daycare, all these other things. So this is an added, you know, almost a burden sometimes to some people.
Curiously, Sherry did post the, she was the first one to post the survey. You know, I think it was in your article.
Yeah, it was. Because I really do believe that hearing from the public on this is such an important part. Because, you know, Jay and I have done a lot of reporting on this. And over time, we've talked to Al and Iris about whether we're following the collaborative now or how things are going. But that has been a huge missing piece. In today's world, you hear so much in, like, comments on Facebook posts. I'm interested to see the results of a real survey. And this interview piece, which I did not know about until right now, like, I just feel like, you know, this information is something we don't know right now. I can't wait to see it, really.
Sherry, I was curious, but you've been writing about this, about how the budget issues, leadership changes have affected the collaborative agreement over the years. It's not the same agreement now as it was when it first came out, is it? I mean, certain things have fallen by the wayside and
Well, the beauty of the collaborative agreement is that it really spells out everything that needs to be done line by line. It is so easy to understand. So many city documents, there's legalese, like, what are we doing? I was reading the streetcar contract yesterday. You know, this is the collaborative. It's very simple. There's things that the city is supposed to be doing. There's things the police department are supposed to be doing. And you're either doing them or you're not doing them. And so it was really easy to take a look at how things were going. And, you know, in all things that have to do with the city, the budget plays a role. Is there money to do it? I mean, the recession, it decimated things that were happening with it. And we've seen some incremental, you know, they've put some more money into it in recent years, each year bolstering it a little bit more. It's still really not where it needs to be. And I think that's one of the things we're going to find in the refresh. But, you know, money is money, and you need it to do these things.
You absolutely do. But the other thing that we are very clear about, and as Al and I have traveled the country, and someone just texted me and asked me to clear up the confusion that the collaborative is no longer in existence. And so I'm going to ask Al to jump in as well.
Because, and that is a great point, because it still exists.
I mean, most of the things that we did are either training, policy and procedure, citizens' complaint authority is still up and running. It has its own charter, if I am correct. And we're going to get that particular number, because the Black community hammers me with, we need to see the charter number to make sure that it is real so that they can know how to react when staff is reduced. However, you know, part of the conversation should be not just how well we're doing, but how can we fail forward? What didn't work? In the beginning, we wanted Al and Scott and Ken to sue on racism. And I was like, that's not how you do these things. So let's figure out how we can change things. We wanted to actually stop officers from pulling their guns out. Remember when Timothy Thomas was killed, there was some discrepancy about Roach having his gun out. And then when Timothy came around, bam, you're shot. So we did a whole survey. We surveyed the communities. We had five areas. And we asked the question about officers pulling guns. I want to emphasize this because people were really afraid to come out and give us their opinion. So we weren't able to prove that. That was not part of the agreement. However, we attempted to highlight that and utilize that. But this agreement is still in force. It's still, people are still working on problem-solving projects. Part of the training around problem-solving and all the tools and everything that come out of the collaborative agreement is alive and well. We just need to exacerbate it, in my opinion.
Court supervision ended in 2008. But the way the collaborative was implemented during court supervision from 2002 to 2008 was by turning all of those paragraphs Sherry was talking about into the policies and procedures of the police department, turning those policies and procedures into the training modules, turning those training modules into the daily activity reports, turning those daily activity reports into the description of how an officer is supposed to do his job, and into the performance evaluations. So it's all still there, and it's just a matter of whether it's being implemented properly or not.
So in 2008, it was very specific. If you look at the court record, it said that the federal monitoring ended. But the court ordered the city and parties to develop a collaborative agreement plan to be used as a guide to continue the ongoing efforts. And it was actually stated that this has to keep going.
I was wondering why in 2008 when the monitor drops off, why you keep going with this. Yeah. Jay, you reported on the unrest that occurred
in 2001.
Yeah, much younger then, too. for people who weren't around at that time, what was that like?
I remember in 2002, I think it's interesting that we're here talking about a refresh of an agreement that really almost could have not happened. Mayor Cranley said it best last week at his press conference when he was talking about, you had a lot of people in the room who didn't particularly like each other. And if not for Judge DeLotte keeping them essentially locked in the federal courthouse to get this done, I remember one negotiating session I believe was on opening day, and that negotiating session lasted until 2 or 3 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. They were back the next day, maybe 10 or noon, and negotiated into the night Tuesday before the agreement was announced on Wednesday. And I think I've heard this a lot, that a good negotiation is when all the parties walking away not necessarily happy and not really feeling that they got everything that they wanted. And I think that describes 2002 when this all came together. And it also got off to a rough start. The first monitor, everyone praises Saul Green, but there was a monitor before Saul Green.
Was it Rothman, I believe?
Kalmanoff.
Okay, thank you.
That did not go very well. He was very good at sending invoices, but
it was the one thing we all agreed on. The FOP, the city, and the plaintiffs, we all agreed that that was a bad monitor, and we got rid of him.
And very quickly. And then there were some bumps in the road. I'm not sure, did the Black United Front formally leave the collaborative at one point? And then that, when they asked to be excused and were excused, and then the FOP said, well, wait a minute, if they're going to get out, we want to get out too.
Yeah, there were a lot of bumps in the road, but we worked through all of them.
Yeah.
And we got to a place where basically the biggest problem was the city. And we had a chief who was dragging his feet, who at one point ordered the monitors not to come into his office anymore, not to do any ride-alongs, ordered me not to do any ride-alongs.
They threw out part of the monitoring team.
Yeah, we had to sue for contempt. Yeah, there were lots of wrinkles. But through all of that, and with an extra year of monitoring because of their delays, we finally got to a place where we were all on the same page. And we're basically still there, which is remarkable.
You know, Jay, and it wasn't from our side. You know, I will say that the Black United Front acted accordingly. We had to put aside a lot of pain and a lot of hurt to enter into this. And I don't want that to go unrecognized. Because people believe that because we entered into this, that everything was well. No, it was not well at all. In the midst of doing all this, I lost a cousin to UCPD. So, you know, these things, our lives are still occurring and we're still working, but we're trying to make it better. So when people talk about it in a very flip way, it kind of incenses me because we sacrificed a lot to get to where we are today.
Well, the other thing that people have to realize is that for the Black community, the policing problems were a symptom of a much broader problem. And as an attorney, all I could say was, well, that's something we can tackle. And that's a bite-sized piece. It's big, but it's still doable. We really wanted to sue over capitalism and its impact on the urban scene, sue over the fact that people weren't getting jobs, sue over the fact that, you know, there wasn't a living wage. Well, we couldn't do those things. But those were more of the root problems that never got addressed and that were part of the issues around whether the Black United Front would stay as a class rep. And those are real. I mean, there's nothing wrong with trying to focus attention on those very real urban problems.
So I will say, you know, I had the opportunity to spend a week with one of the very first recruit classes after several years of not having recruit classes. And the collaborative was very much up in community policing, very much a part of the things they were learning. They didn't invite me along to, like, look at the police things they were learning, and I didn't care really to see those things. They made sandwiches and they gave them out to homeless people and they worked with homeless youth and they went to the Over the Rhine Senior Center and they met the people that they would be protecting and serving. And just to see that was really an emotional week of, like, this is what policing, this is the community is going to be like. And so I just think that there was a lot of takeaways of that.
Is that more of the problem solving methodology that you're talking about in policing?
Absolutely. The problem is, how do you see the problem? And I believe that we were problem solving before we even understood what problem solving was using the SAIR process. And what that allows us to do is, even if we come up with a remedy and it doesn't work, we come back to the table and we try to figure out how to do it again. And so absolutely. And I thought that was a great great piece of work, and that was under Blackwell, that put officers in places where they probably had not been before. And if you've ever sat and interviewed an officer, and I have lateral and new recruits, and you ask them about their experience, some of them have never policed in the urban setting. And it's difficult. And that was one of the very high concerns of our attorney, Ken Lawson, that officers were coming in from very small cities, small towns, and coming into an urban setting based on what they had learned and heard about African-Americans all their lives. And then the two clash and meet. And we have these issues. So we've been trying to sit at the table and figure this out. This, you know, even though people may think that the collaborative is gone, Al and I are still at the table. The Black United Front is not gone anywhere, Sherry.
I know that.
And I'm not sure if anybody will know the answer to this or not. We got an email from Jim. He says, first off, he's thankful for the review and refresh. He wanted to know if the Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence, if that's still active or not.
Yes, it is. I don't think it's working very well, and it is actually on the work plan for something that is targeted in this review and refresh. It is a form of problem solving. It arises out of the data-driven policing that we're trying to do. My own view is that I think we're not as rigorous as we were when we first started it, and therefore we're not capturing all the group-involved shootings like we did originally. And therefore, if you don't capture them, if you don't know who's in the group, then you can't deter people from that level of violence. We've also just basically given up on moving people through carrots like job services, addiction services, education services, away from violent activity. And the only thing left is the stick. And I definitely want to go back to the original concept behind CIRV, which included both the threat that we're going to get you if you commit crimes, and the carrot saying you don't have to live like this. Here is a vision of what your life could be like if you accept services. And we have a lot of work to do to get CIRV back in place, and I appreciate that question.
It's a good question.
Al, the first agreement worked because you had the federal court involved. You have a monitor. You mentioned that the city was held in contempt for not complying. With this refresh, how effective will that be without when you're talking about the stick of the monitor and the federal court to implement the recommendations that may come out of this refresh?
Well, of course, at least in this instance, we have cooperation up and down the hierarchy. The chief is just here, and this chief is very supportive. The mayor is very supportive. Every political candidate is very supportive. So no matter who gets elected to council or to the mayorship, we have a commitment to do this. And the one thing that came out of that 2008 order that Sherry was referring to is the Manager's Advisory Group, which is the continuing group of stakeholders that originally framed the collaborative to begin with. So we have community people, we have police, we have business people, we have representative of all the stakeholders. We have continued to meet since 2008. And we still exist, and we are, there's a liaison group of the MAG, as we're called, working with this review and refresh effort so that we can take all these recommendations and be the engine to make sure they get done.
Al, how much has the collaborative agreement that we have here in Cincinnati, how much has that served as a model for other communities?
It has been a national model for many other communities. I don't think anybody has matched it. No one has actually invited the police, or the police haven't accepted invitations to be co-conveners like they have here. But Iris and I have been all over the country talking to police groups, talking to community groups. And the Justice Department picked up a lot of its ideas for the 14 consent decrees they currently have and have implemented problem solving in some of those decrees. Mm-hmm. So at least my view is that it served well as a model for other jurisdictions.
And just in the beginning conversations with communities and police, I know Saul and I were in Puerto Rico last February, having the same conversation about how do they begin to get started and what does it look like. We were in Milwaukee. We've gone all over talking about how to incorporate and what fits for them and what are the people's issues. We've learned a lot since we've started this. I think the original table grew up together, but a lot of people have gone away. And so now here we are. And I think it is on each and every citizen in the city of Cincinnati to learn what the collaborative is, to let your voice be heard, and to own this and not allow just one group or one segment of the community run away. When we do that, then things happen and we have these breakage and of things that we need to see happen as a whole for the children. The children are looking at us to design and continue something that they can feel good about, feel safe in their community, and know that when they call the police, it's not an issue.
Hold on. Let's just take one challenge that we are facing, and that is to move away from the idea that policing is how we respond to public safety problems, and move toward the idea that we all own public safety.
That's perfect. Because, Irish, you said...
I didn't mean to cut you off. You said we have the power to create the public safety we want.
I'm quoting you here.
Yes.
It's not just about policing.
There, what we've learned from Baltimore and Ferguson as we've traveled, that there are other institutions that bear burden. And I think that what was written in the collaborative, and I keep saying paragraph 9, Al, I don't know if that's right or not inside of the agreement, when the city, when it says the city shall adopt SARA as its problem-solving mechanism, not just for police, but for the city, for each and every department. We believe in using SARA. SARA is a proven problem-solving mechanism, and we believe that if the city broadened its use of SARA, we would see more effective use of city services, and we would see more people feeling engaged and a part of and not separate from. So, yes, it is incumbent on all of us.
I was just going to point out that the collaborative is on the city's website. All you have to do is Google it, and it's just a click away. It is an interesting read, and it's easy to read.
How long is it?
It's only like 30-something pages long.
Okay,
and, so and then the last part of it is just the benchmarks, but read that too.
It's interesting that there was a comment at the budget hearing last night about the amount of the city budget that in the general fund that's directed toward police and fire. And this lady's comment was, however, and this is a direct quote, however, safety is not guaranteed by police and fire. It's helped by funding human services, by job creation, by cleanliness, by lighting, by building inspection and enforcement. And she asked council to really reconsider how much of the city's budget goes to police and fire. And there were applause from the audience, and actually a couple of council members acknowledged that perhaps it was time to review that.
Although this city is not unique in having so much of its budget go to public safety, the county is the exact same way. I've worked in other cities. I mean, these things cost money. Like, you have to have a fleet of police cars. You have to pay these officers. You have recruit classes. These things are not inexpensive. I mean, the budget, it adds up.
Well, I just want to say, though, but this part of the review, because I've gotten a lot of questions from the Black community on who's funding this internal review. And I want to be clear that it is coming from asset forfeiture dollars. And the chief gave me the okay to say that from the Cincinnati Police Department. So I just wanted to make that clear as a commitment to seeing us get this right or better.
And thank you for pointing that out. What does this refresh mean for Cincinnati?
What does it mean for Cincinnati? We get to really live up to what we say we are. And it gives us the ability for all of us to step in it, and including the media. We were in Milwaukee and we talked to the Rotary Club, I believe it was, a large contingent of the Jewish community. And we talked about the media's role in this. And as I said earlier, when we have issues every day that we see the depiction of African Americans in such a negative way, it's almost impossible to feel as though you're moving somewhere. Many of us have dedicated our lives to making this agreement work with zero pay. So when we have to combat with media, we got print, TV, and radio about who African Americans are and what they look like and what we do in such a negative way, it makes it harder for us to do this. So I believe this is a time that we can open up and we can talk about what role the media plays in this, what role our school system, housing, jobs, all this stuff, so that we can really live up to the terms of the collaborative agreement.
Al, any final thoughts?
Well, I just want to echo what Ira said, and also to go back to the comment that came up at the budget hearing that we were just talking about. Think about problem solving. Think about the fact that you've got an area of the city where there are drug dealing going on. The way we approach it under the collaborative is we get all the people related to that geographical area together, and we determine, Are you screening your tenants right? Do you have lighting and environmental things you could change? This involves lots of city departments.
And now I hate to cut in, but and we're that close is to the end here.
Okay, so anyway, that's the vision of policing. It doesn't mean just arrests.
Well, thank you all for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.